Ukraine is an autonomous country, but part of what we're hearing from Russia, especially Vladimir Putin, is that he wants troops to be able to defend Russia's citizens, quote unquote. What does he mean by that if Ukraine is its own country? How can they be Russian citizens?
Well, Ukraine has been its own country since the dissolution of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s. And Crimea fits into this because even within Ukraine, Crimea is an autonomous region within Ukraine. So less like a U.S. state and more like Puerto Rico. Some of the people in Ukraine also have Russian citizenship. In southern Ukraine, you have a majority of Russian speakers, many of whom also have Russian citizenship. And when Putin is saying this, from his perspective, he sees an unlawful ousting of a democratically elected government up in Kiev. And he's framing his action as an intervention on behalf of those folks and to protect their interests.
So because Yanukovych was removed, he's saying that that was a coup and completely illegal.
Right.
Why does it even matter what Vladimir Putin thinks, though, if Ukraine is an autonomous country?
Putin's opinion is important because Russia is a major player in the region, and especially in the south of Ukraine and in eastern Ukraine. A large share of the population is sympathetic to that perspective. In the last presidential election, Crimea and the surrounding administrative districts voted for Yanukovych by something like an 80 to 90% margin, in many cases even higher than that, up at 95%. So it's very, very divided geographically. And so we've heard the leader of Crimea, which is again autonomous, come out in support of Russian action, condoning it basically. And they've just announced that they will be voting at the end of the month on greater autonomy from Ukraine.
Oh, so completely separating.
Yeah, I don't know whether the referendum that's been proposed would call for complete independence from Ukraine. I think the language is framed as greater autonomy. But clearly this kind of a vote would provide a little bit more cover for Putin and for Russia.
What are some of the potential repercussions that we're looking at as far as Ukraine and for Europe?
That's difficult to answer. And I think it depends on Europe's response to this. And this is why Europe has been very hesitant to issue a strong response. Economically, at first it looked like this would cause a major disruption. Stock market was off. The Russian ruble fell quite a bit. Gazprom, which is Russia's state-owned energy company, took a huge hit in its stocks. But everything has bounced back. As folks in the United States have talked about, very tough economic sanctions, excluding Russia from the G8, freezing assets. We've seen European states back off of those harsh responses, because the level of trade between European countries and Russian countries is quite a bit higher than the level of trade between Russia and the United States.
Does Ukraine even have a chance militarily without European support or without Western support?
No, militarily, Ukraine doesn't have a chance. And I think there are two relevant legal frameworks that we can think about. One is that Ukraine has basically leased a major harbor, Sevastopol, in Crimea to Russia, and it's the home of Russia's Black Sea Fleet. But under that agreement, the Russian fleet and members of the Russian military have to stay within designated zones, and they're not supposed to expand into other parts of Crimea, which they have. So there's a violation there.
Right.
Another relevant agreement governs the presence of military vessels in the Black Sea, going back to the 1930s. Only Black Sea states can have military ships in the Black Sea, and this is going to limit the response a little bit as well. So clearly there is a violation of the agreement between the government in Ukraine and the government in Russia. I think from Putin's perspective, that agreement is void because he sees the new president in Ukraine as illegitimate.
In the next few days, the NATO members are going to meet. And it's obvious from the rhetoric already that the U.S. and Britain are both anti-Russia in this case. What is NATO's place in this?
It's a good question. And I think the 2008 conflict in Georgia is a useful parallel as we think about this. So Georgia is another former Soviet state. It's also on the Black Sea. It's only a few hundred miles from Ukraine and Crimea and Sochi and all of these other places that have been in the news. And in 2008, Russian troops went into two regions, South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And at the time, we saw similar kinds of tough rhetoric from the West. Sanctions were discussed. They never really happened. Ostracizing Vladimir Putin was discussed. And the extent of the response was the United States delivering humanitarian aid to Georgia, not in civilian ships, but in military ships. This is an even trickier situation because now Germany gets 60% of its natural gas and about 40% of its oil from Russia. And without German support, it's tough to see NATO or the EU taking very bold action here.
And Germany has so far been very, very quiet about the whole thing.
And this is why Germany has been so quiet. The Dutch have also been very quiet because they're Russia's number one export partner. There's also a new underwater pipeline between Russia and Germany that delivers this energy. In that sense, Germany has a little bit of an advantage there because they're no longer as dependent on the pipelines that go through Ukraine and the rest of Eastern Europe.
So we actually might hear from Germany during this meeting of NATO members.
Yeah, and I think we would expect to hear a lot of restraint coming from Germany and also from the Netherlands and less from the United States and Britain. They have less to lose economically.
Well, let's talk for a minute then about Crimea and why Crimea is so connected to Russia politically, ethnically. How does that work?
Crimea today is around 60% Russian. But Crimea came to have those demographics because of very intentional policies under the Soviet Union, and especially under Joseph Stalin. In the 1930s, Stalin oversaw what have been called man-made famines that killed millions of ethnic Ukrainians and Tatars, not only in Crimea, but throughout southern Ukraine. Some estimates put those deaths at up to 10 or 12 million. During World War II and after World War II, the ethnic minorities living in southern Ukraine were accused of working with the Nazis. And much of that area was forcibly depopulated. The ethnic minorities were forced to relocate to Siberia and Central Asia. And some estimates say 40 to 50% of the people who were removed from that area died. And they were only allowed to return after the Soviet Union broke up in the early 1990s. So today, Crimea is majority Russian, but it's more complicated than that because of these policies under the Soviet Union that forcibly changed the demographics in that area. The Russian population in Crimea is not united in its preferences for its relationship with Russia. And maybe this will come out if we see this referendum come to a vote in Crimea at the end of the month when they vote on the degree of autonomy that they want from Ukraine.
Right.
There are certainly some interest groups in Crimea that want very, very close ties with Moscow. And there are others that probably track closer to sovereignty for Crimea as an independent country.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.